Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I'm here, everybody. Today's show is going to be pretty much winging it because I've been really behind on getting things ready. But welcome to Troy and Michael Speaks podcast, where we explore our world as humans through the eyes of an entity we call Michael, who teaches from what is referred to as the causal plane. And I'm Troy, your host and resident Michael channel. The Michael Teachings is an ever-growing body of knowledge shared from this entity, Michael, through various channels from around the world, offering us tools for understanding, nurturing, and building our personal universe. To learn more about the Michael Teachings, and Troy, that's me, please register at truthloveenergy.com and check out the quick intro and the basic intro so you can better enjoy the show. On today's show, we're talking about the seven circles of love, and on our panel today, we have Sandy, Cypress, and the adorable sprite known as Dan H. Well, hello everyone. That was a really lovely, smooth intro into the show. I've been clicking around and trying to run this switchboard and handle everything at once. It's just a little overwhelming. I'm pretty good at multitasking, but I went a little bit awry today, so I apologize. But like I was saying before that we went into the Revolution of a Heart song, on today's show we're talking about the seven circles of love. And on our panel today, we have Sandy, as usual, and Cypress, as usual, and the adorable sprite known as Anne H. She's like a little sprite. So, it's February, and I can't believe it. January is already gone. It flew by. I don't know where it went. But before we get into the show, I also want to apologize for skipping out on the last show. I had gone out to celebrate my 40th birthday. Happy birthday! And what with all the gift drinks throughout the night, I just didn't fare very well the next day, so I was a mess. And I got up and I thought I could wing it, but I was actually very sick, so I couldn't even wing it. So I'm really sorry about that, but it was a really wonderful birthday, so I have no real complaints, and the hangover was worth it. But I really didn't mean for it to interfere with my work, so I am sorry about that. But today we have a very, very big subject, and that subject is love. And I'm sure there's a lot to be said about love from all different angles, from its symptoms showing up in chemicals throughout our body to its blissful feelings when it all seems to be in sync and making sense to us, to the complete debilitation and devastation we seem to feel when we lose it, or at least we think we've lost it. So there's an entire spectrum of experiences included in love. And what I'm going to share with you now is an article on what Michael referred to as the seven rings of love. So get your notebooks and your pens ready so you can write down your thoughts and your feelings as we go along. And then after introducing this article, we'll bring on the panel for a discussion. And we're going to probably take callers earlier than usual. And I may not be going into trance today, I apologize, but I have a guest in the house and I don't have the privacy that I normally would, so Michael might not be a part of the show other than through the article, so I apologize for that as well. Lots of apologies today. As you already know, you are encouraged and you're invited and you're needed to call into the show so we can hear your thoughts and your experiences with love. And we'll be, like I said, taking callers in probably about an hour. So if you get through on the line, just hang in there. Really want to hear from you. And so here's the article. Now, this is the Seven Rings of Love, and there's a lot here. So my panel who is on hold, just hang in there with me and go through the article with me so we have something to talk about. But so this is from Michael. So we are asked tonight to cover what we perceive as the seven rings of love, considering the magnitude of impact that understanding this universal truth would have on an individual life. We are continually surprised at the lack of attention this subject receives. This is not conveyed to you as a judgment, but as an observation. There is no obligation to ever understand our perception of a subject. You will learn to love, and you will love to learn at your own paces and through your own experiences, regardless of your intimacy or lack of intimacy with us. As we cover the seven rings of love, you will easily see where you are in various areas of your life in relation to events, people, and yourself. You may have no questions in your love for a certain individual, yet have a painful challenge against loving the perpetrators of war or cruelty, for instance. In other instances, you may find you experience a ring of love for a complete stranger, yet feel quite repulsed by your own mate. We will list the seven rings then, and then cover each in some detail. So the first ring of love is nurturing. The second ring of love is alliance. The third ring of love is reciprocity. The fourth ring of love is appreciation. The fifth ring of love is comprehension. The sixth ring of love is altruism. The seventh ring of love is agape. So Michael goes on to say that the first ring, nurturing, of course, is not tremendously difficult to bring to your life or to someone else's. Even events receive some amount of this ring of love if you experience certain repetitive patterns in your life. In other words, if you find you continue to struggle with issues that change form but retain the core lesson, you are providing some form of nurturing for those issues, some form of love. Love is not reserved for only humans or relationships, but is able to be generated for all events you experience as a sentient being. When you have repetitive patterns in your life and you wish they were not a part of your life, it will do you well to observe in what ways you nurture these events as a means to extract or create opportunities for expanding into wider rings of love, or as a means to opening to receive love. We will clarify here that no ring of love has condition. That fact is the one underlying theme throughout each ring. When you truly nurture another person, yourself, or an event, it is without condition. This is why some events continue to remain even as you assume you prefer them to leave. On some level of your consciousness, you have determined that your quote-unquote unwanted areas of your life require unquestioned nurturing, so it will remain nurtured. Some of the most important first experiences of love are found in nurturing unwanted situations and relationships. Consider the result of having an unwanted child, yet without question providing the nurture required for sustaining the life of that child. Nurturing unwanted events is similar, even as the event outgrows you or you outgrow it. Nurture is the lowest form of love, yet it is love. It is unquestioned obligation and duty. Because the experience of loving is vital to a lifetime, many events and people remain within the life that may be harmful, draining, and even dangerous, because to nurture these things means at least some amount of love is being experienced. At some point, a fragment will either move beyond that ring of love or eventually dismiss the event as it grows out of hand or out of control, responding in a way one would to an unwanted child. To move beyond nurture for an event or person or self, one must be willing to move beyond obligation and duty and into at least alliance, the second ring. Alliance is the second ring of love, and this ring sees the person, event, or self as an equal. If the person, event, or part of self is not found to be equal, then at least some striking similar traits are emphasized. Alliance becomes necessarily exclusive of other people and events and various parts of the self. The ring of duty and obligation experienced is increased, but without resentment or lack of understanding, and with more willingness and enthusiasm. Issues having been nurtured in the life become more understood, even if still unwanted, much in the same way that a person may surrender to or devote oneself to an unwanted child. Alliance allows that which is being loved to become, for the first time, a part of the identity of the self. To move from nurture to alliance, one only need gain a level of understanding that your actions led you to the event, person, or part of self. This ring is related to the third chakra, or moving center, and the first ring, nurture, is related to the first chakra, or instinctive center. Alliance then leads to reciprocity, the third ring of love. Reciprocity is the ring that begins to incorporate the emotions, or emotional centering, fourth chakra. It then becomes the first time that a fragment begins to receive energy and a circuit is created. The first two rings focus on basic ways of giving love, but to receive love is far more challenging than to give it. Although love is more than a circuit of energy, that circuit must be completed before broader rings of love are experienced. Reciprocity is the ring of love many are capable of reaching on a steady and stable basis. It is fairly easy to live with this ring and still experience the range of emotional, instinctive, and physical experiences that can challenge a life, self, or relationship. This is the ring in which your issues or unwanted events, challenging relationships, and difficult parts of self are even more consciously explored as being mirrors or as having more meaningful possibilities beyond superficial challenges. This is the ring in which you begin to experience more important attraction/repulsion experiences within events, parts of self, and others. Because this ring is experienced within the arena of emotions, it can be quite confusing and difficult to manage at times, but it is marked by its strange, solid experience of truly knowing a strong connection and strength is shared with even the most repulsive of people, events, or parts of the self. This is because this ring has the ability to perceive in even the worst of events, people, and parts of self that gifts can come of that experience, and this allows the continued exploration. To move from alliance to reciprocity, one must be willing to feel in relation to that which is being loved. So reciprocity then leads to appreciation, the fourth ring of love. This ring of love relates to the intellectual center, or the fifth chakra, and is the first time a fragment is able to differentiate between what is and is not your definition of you, and allows a release of that which is not you. Appreciation is the ring of love that recognizes the diversity of life and can begin grasping the reality that not everything has to be important or have purpose. The fragment begins to forgive, to truly accept that there has never been a mistake, that all experiences are simply that, experiences, and that all people are just that, people. This is a ring that loses the emphasis that everyone must find a powerful position within their own definition of life, but does allow for others' definitions, even if those definitions are diametrically opposed to your own. Many fragments find this ring of love to be invigorating and begin creating strings of sexual and emotional relationships of short durations. This provides satisfying, beautiful, and intensely contained experiences of love. This ring of love is experienced strongly during the hormonal washes of the formative teen years, but the experiences are dismissed as meaningless, not only because of the nature inherent in that ring, but also because no validity is given by your culture to the knowledge gained from such formative and fleeting experiences. Of course, we do not say, nor do we imply, that the teen years are the only years in which this ring of love is experienced, as this ring of love can also be generated and sustained even as a lifestyle form of love for some. We also wish to emphasize that the serial sexual/emotional exploration is only one example of how this ring might be experienced. A more encompassing description is simply that the fragment begins to find a great appeal in exploring anything foreign, unfamiliar, and alien. In terms of the unwanted issues, the love experienced at this fourth ring will have the fragment finding the issues and events as being adventures, exciting tours in the world of experiences rather than as mere burdens. In addition, this ring begins to see and reach beyond the person or event being loved, expanding to include all associations with that particular event or person. Any friend of yours is a friend of mine. Mine might be an example, a simple familiar phrase to capture that ring. Appreciation then leads to comprehension, or the fifth ring. The fifth ring is associated with the seventh chakra, or higher intellectual center. This is the ring in which all events, people, and self are seen as quite simply having a part in the truth. In other words, this is the ring in which you realize that absolutely nothing is wrong, that everything is dancing a part in the scheme of things, and you grasp that truth. You begin to comprehend that events and people exist for their own truth and their own reason, and that these events and people do not require your understanding. This is also the first time the self becomes fully integrated as itself in relation to the event or person being loved, but recognizes these external factors as part of the life, not as defining it. There is no longer a distraction with attachments to external factors as being the only definition of you. For instance, if a relationship ends, this is seen as an experience, not as a blow to your identity. To move from appreciation to comprehension, one simply begins to experience awe. Everything seems to begin to make sense, despite the lack of logic. Comprehension then leads to altruism, which is the sixth ring of love. Altruism relates to the higher emotional center, or the sixth chakra. While comprehension sees the truth of an event or person, altruism experiences the deep compassion for how life may be experienced by others. There is an encompassing acceptance of the human condition and an emphasis on the fact that life is never experienced exactly the same by any two points of consciousness in time or space. This ring of love is the first time you feel human, or feel a full part of your species with acceptance of that position of sentience. As the fifth ring of love loses any emphasis on yourself as being fragmented, the sixth ring loses emphasis on events or issues as distractions. There begins to be seen only a vast sea of experiential paths that are interpreted by everyone differently. It is the simultaneous understanding that while you experience your world quite particularly, another fragment may never have experienced or interpreted it in the same way or even remotely similar. It is the realization that it has never been the events or parts of self that defined or created the life, but simply how well you loved it. To move from comprehension to altruism, one would tend to experience true compassion or empathy for that which is being explored. And finally, the seventh ring of love is agape, reached through altruism. At this ring, there is no emphasis on anything. Complete acceptance is experienced with absolute loss of condition, meaning, reference, and definition. As the sixth ring developed a lack of emphasis on events and the fifth ring lost emphasis on self, the final ring removes all emphasis beyond the allowance of experience. Agape is peace. This ring is related to the all-encompassing boundless higher moving center, or Tao. This is the ring of realization that all of your life was created by you or allowed by you, and that not only is there nothing wrong or separate, but that everything is perfect in its own way. We will add that the fifth ring of love is marked biologically through the experience of crying or tears, as this is the realization of truth on some level. To acknowledge the truth of anything is a higher ring of love. Furthermore, true hate can be included in the fifth ring, as hate is a powerful form of intimacy and recognition of truth. The sixth ring of love is marked biologically through true pleasure, or what most would call happiness, as these states are in an experience of lacking fragmentation and self-acceptance in the moment. The seventh ring of love is marked biologically through the experience of true laughter, or the recognition of oneness among all. The power of tears, pleasure, and laughter are simple, accessible experiences to allow these rings of love to be experienced in many instances within the life. Yet these biological interpretations of those rings are difficult to sustain, and that's understandable. So that's the end of the article, and I appreciate you sticking with me through it. And after the break, we're going to bring the panel on, and we're going to discuss it, and we're going to talk about love in our lives. So everybody get your questions ready for love, and we'll be back in a moment.
Baby. so much, even the blind could see that without you, baby girl, there's no me. Anywhere you go, that's where I wanna be. Cause you know we hooked up with L-O-V-E, love. Yes, I can feel it in the air. Cause when I do the wrong thing, you're still there. You keep me clean, you even do my hair. Without you, girl, my life is unfair. I can't see my life without you up in it. We a team, if you leave, girl, I'll stop winning. I need you now, or I won't stop tripping. We've been through a lot, but it's only the beginning. Your love is like an ocean and my heart sets sail. I call your cell phone just to hear your voicemail. Your love is like a prison, girl, and I'm in jail. With you helping me, girl, I cannot fail. You my girl, I need you in my life, and I promise to love you forever, cause you're my sunshine.
Well, wasn't that just lovely? Everything's themed in love today, so now we're going to bring on the panel. So I'm going to introduce Sandy and Anne and Cypress. So here they come now. Let's see if I can get them on here. Hey, Sandy. Hey, Anne. Hey, Cypress.
Oh,
hi.
Hi.
There you are. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo! So thanks for hanging in there while we went over the whole article. I'm sure that you loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It was delightful.
And I remember, I remember what you said.
Oh, yeah, right, I know. That's why I said get your pens and your notepad. You did get the copy of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
thank goodness.
And for callers who may call in, the number is, 646-200-0772. We'd love to hear from you. So, well, what, when you guys read it or when you are, you know, when we went over it just now, I have a couple of questions. One is, what were your first thoughts in general? Did it make sense? And where did you think that you found yourselves gravitating toward the most? Like, where did you, in general, did you see, like, oh, this is the ring that I seem to live from the most? Did you guys notice anything like that? Whoever wants to chime first can go. Oh, is that Anne?
Yes. Because the first thing when I looked at it was, okay, where am I? You know, and basically, how loving a person am I?
Yeah.
You start to get into, well, I have to say that I know I've not hit altruism, that's for sure, not very often. And I certainly have experienced the fifth ring. I would say that probably, I mean, we're, let's see, I'm, I have to flip through my note, you know, my copy here.
Yeah.
Reciprocity, then appreciation. I would say that probably, you know, I hang out in the fourth more. I mean, I appreciate things, but I can't say I comprehend. You know, I don't. And I've certainly been through all of them, including hate. But
yeah.
You know, that appreciation strikes me as maybe the one that's most comfortable. You know, going beyond that, I think kind of can freak me out sometimes. And altruism is just not, you know, I suppose I go there. I'm not really sure. You know, I have to kind of think about it on a day-to-day basis a little.
Yeah, it seems like that would be a tough ring to live from, even though it's totally probably more natural than not, but just being there, altruism and agape, woo, those are things that you pretty much, that I've glimpsed, but it's really hard to live there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I relate to the appreciation and comprehension rings as well. They seem to – they kind of fit into my life, the way that I have to look at some of the challenges and the challenging people and the parts of me that I don't really get along with.
Right.
That really, really – those things made a lot of sense when I looked at how I interpret things and get understanding out of my experiences. Sandy?
Yeah, I was just waiting.
Oh, are you guys, do you guys hear a clicking or is that just my phone?
We're rattling through pages.
That might be us rattling paper.
Oh, no, it's like a...
I don't hear any clicking.
I hear no clicking, but I'm...
It must be my lovely phone line. Who knows? Okay. So, Sandy, I'm sorry. I wanted to get
That's
your...
That's okay. You know, I don't know if I habitually or even the majority of the time have a spot here. I keep looking at it and thinking, well, yeah, I've been there on occasion, but I can't say that I'm there a lot. And I feel that way about all of them. And I think that the reason for that, to me, the most important thing in this whole thing is the sentence. We will clarify here that no ring of love has condition.
Yeah.
And the minute I think I'm comfortable somewhere, I find conditions and I'm not there anymore.
Yeah. No, are you sure?
I'm a very conditional person.
That is true.
Well, I want to ask you, I wonder sometimes if it's conditions or if it's just our feelings, because I think a lot of times it's still love even when we have the range of feelings like disappointment or because expectation, all those things are – love is really encompassing in all of these rings that Michael described are love, you know, from the most basic to the highest form. So it's unconditional in the sense that you're included in that. So when you feel disappointed, when you feel upset, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not loving. So I think I just want to ask you if the conditions that you're aware of are because you are wanting someone else or something to do what you need to do, and then otherwise it's, you know, you reject it, or if it's just that you experience a range of emotions in relation to, like, the ride of love.
Well, I do experience a huge range of emotions because I'm just a very emotionally centered person, so I'm sure that that's part of it. But even if it's just against myself, I find myself putting conditions. I catch myself at it. I'm not proud of it.
Yeah.
But I catch myself at it. And sometimes it's with me. You know, sometimes I'll you know, push that self-depth down a bit and say, you know, Sandy, you're not such a bad person after all. And
yeah.
And as soon as I start to feel that way for any little length of time that I'm having a little bit of self-love, I'll find a condition attached to that. Well, you're not so bad today because you're doing this, but if you did that, you would be just as bad as you ever were.
Ah, so you kind of fall out of the moment and into all these speculations
and conditions.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's me or somebody else. I can be looking at somebody else and saying, boy, I really love so-and-so, and so-and-so is a really loving person, except sometimes they do this, so maybe they're not as good as I thought they were. It can be me, it could be you, it could be anybody.
Yeah.
I can't stay focused with this love thing.
Well, like I said, I think some levels of these loves or circles of love include that, because how can you – I mean, that's part of why we're discussing it, is because I think that people misunderstand what love really is and how it's simultaneously the easiest thing in the world to do, but it's also the most misunderstood, so we don't do it very well, because we usually – you know, what we experience as love is usually some form of attachment to something. And like you said, conditions about something. But it also it does include, you know, all of those speculations and all those ideals and wishes for betterment. And I don't. It's hard for me to comprehend loving to the point where it, like it says, as it grows in these circles of love, where things start to lose, like they stop mattering. It seems like we get stuck at a place where we want to make sense of things, and then there's a point where it doesn't have to make sense anymore, and that's really hard. That's the hardest part for me. What level, what ring was that where you start losing the need to make sense of things?
Mm-hmm.
Is that really, that's high up there. Let's see, where is that?
I think that's in the fifth, isn't it?
Let's see.
You realize that absolutely nothing is wrong, and everything is dancing apart in the scheme of things. And you
that's around
that
altruism and agape.
That's it. Six,
hello.
Seven.
No, see, I get there as often as I do anywhere else.
Yeah.
But I just don't stay put anywhere.
And before we go too far off, Cypress, did you want to chime in? How are you
yes,
feeling
I did.
Today, sweetheart?
I'm doing okay today, thanks.
Yay.
Well, the first thing that I would like to point out is one of the things that, first thing that caught my eye when I started reading this is that it's not just people and things, that it can also be issues that you nurture and things like that. That was something I thought was very interesting that we do. And I started thinking about the fact that, you know, we all have issues. And what do I mean, why do I nurture some of these? And what do I really get from them? And I really thought that was a very interesting aspect of it, because you have to nurture it to keep it for so long, especially when you really don't, when you want to get rid of it. And why can't you get rid of it? Because, well, if you're feeding it and clothing it and keeping it safe, why would it go anywhere? You know?
I know. I find that to be really interesting, that some of our first experiences of real love is nurturing the things that we dislike the most.
I know. That. I thought that was really, that was just the first thing that really caught my attention when I was reading it. But regarding where I live, you know, I think as much as I would like to say, you know, I'm just chock full of it, I think that I've been to all the different levels of love at times, but I don't think that I live anywhere particularly. I don't think I'm just as like Sandy is, where I have all these conditions. That's really not my issue. I think I think it's more, probably more normal to float around based on the situation, based on the event, based on the person, based on the day you're having. You know, I mean, there's so many things that have got to impact it, but I have definitely had encounters with all the levels.
Yeah,
you know,
seems like that's the case.
But I just don't necessarily think I can. And I definitely also think another thing that was very interesting that was said in here, getting to the third level of reciprocity, is the difference is having to receive it, to feel, to have that circuit of love.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that is also never really talked about enough, is that it's so much easier to love something else than it is to accept the love back.
Which seems really surprising, because we tend to
we
think
all want
that
it.
What?
We all want love. Y'all want to be loved. That's the whole big, you want to love and be loved. That's like the, you know, the big joy in the universe. Yet we make it so difficult, and we're not accepting a lot of times of the love that is given to us.
Which, yeah, and it seems ironic, considering that we are, you know, we're generally seen as a pretty greedy race or species of creatures, and so for us to reject it on that level for the self seems ironic. But it is, it's, and I think it might only be relative to people who are really consciously trying to love that you really realize how little you let it in. And then you realize how little, how little you let it in, how much that impedes your giving it too. It's like this vicious cycle. So the more conscious you become of that circuit, I mean, the intimacy and the closeness, you know, changes exponentially between you and another person once you get that circuit in place and you're giving and receiving.
Well, how also unfair it is to other people to not receive it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Because they want, you know, they want to, I mean, how unacknowledging of other human beings' love. You know, I find that certainly for myself, like, well, why don't I acknowledge this? You know,
that's
why don't
really
I
important.
It? It's so rejecting of someone else, really, in a way, by not receiving.
But in reality,
it's rejecting of yourself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Michael says that you can only love, you can only receive as much love, a percentage of what you love yourself.
Yeah.
So if I love Troy 90%, but he only loves himself 40, he only gets 40% of my 90.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember we had a session on that? That was a hard one to understand. No wonder this is a hard conversation.
Yeah, I think that the reciprocity is why it's so important, is because we don't realize, just like Anne said, this, that by our not receiving it, we're not loving another person truly. I mean,
right?
We are to the degrees that Michael's describing them here, but when we really kind of think we don't deserve it, or we just don't acknowledge it, or just to make that circuit, it is, for lack of a better word, an insult to the circuit, to the connection that could be there. And
right.
You don't realize how it short circuits it. So reciprocity is, to me, seems like a level that once you would get to that point, the rest might fall into place a little bit easier. because I'm looking at the other rings beyond that, and I was thinking, where is it? Oh, the altruism level.
Mm-hmm.
If when I think about the feeling of owning my part in the human race.
Yeah.
But then I remember how often I'm like, everybody's so stupid.
Yeah.
And how we kind of separate ourselves out as if we're somehow, I don't know, not even intentionally, but we seem to separate ourselves out because we're older souls or because we think, you know, differently from other people, and we become...
Or because we're arrogant.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm leading up to. Like, we just divide ourselves from others and through arrogance, greed, self-deprecation, whatever it is, stubbornness.
Well, isn't one of the parts of... Which one is the part where you make an exclusive, something is exclusive?
Oh, that's, I think the second.
Yeah, alliance, I think that happens
Wait. Let me make, yeah, alliance. That's where you become, where you're willing to love, you know, something that's familiar to you. And then you kind of exclude everything else. And I think a lot of relationships are based on that.
Yeah, definitely.
The moving from nurturing to alliance is because, ooh, you're like me. I love you.
Yeah,
and I think that's important because, just like we said, as we grow and evolve through the rings, I think we need to understand how to love ourselves through seeing it in other people before we differentiate ourselves and learn to love what's not in other people.
It's like the cliques, you know, you form. And, you know, when you're a kid, it's like a little kid, and you go, you know, you have blue sneakers. I have blue sneakers.
Yes.
You know, it becomes like, ooh, we have so much in common.
I know. It's funny when you hear people talk about how much they have in common, and even in my own history.
We have.
And then in retrospect, you're like, that wasn't enough.
No.
That's no reason to base love. But it's a start. It's a part of the process.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
About conditions. You know, agape is unconditional love. So Michael may be meaning something else besides conditions. In other words, like a different way of approaching condition. Because I always thought of agape as absolutely unconditional love of everything. And clearly, you know, most of us don't get there much. So I'm wondering if it doesn't mean something else in this context, this condition. I was thinking about that when Sandy was talking.
What's meant by unconditional love from Michael's perspective is the lack of attachment. I think that's the ultimate love, is where you can sustain the acceptance of another person no matter how bad it goes, no matter how disappointing it is, no matter how they hurt you. Or seem to hurt you. Though it's the lack of attachment, I think, that's synonymous with unconditional. So I guess when Michael said there's no conditions through any of those levels,
yeah,
I think there might be a little spin on what they mean. Like we've been talking about how they use words differently than what we expect them to be.
Right, yeah. So
think it means?
What, the conditions? There are no conditions?
Yeah, when they say there's no conditions on any of those levels. Well, you know what? I think it might be that there's no conditions within the context of that particular ring.
Okay, that makes
sense. So, like, it's not unconditional across the board, which is agape, but it's unconditional, like, in the ring of nurturing. You're going to nurture whether you like it or not, whether you want to or not, whether you consciously intend to or not.
Right.
You're just
But not everybody does that. There are very non-nurturing people.
Well, I think that they're using that word bigger than what we're thinking, too, because they're talking about nurturing things that we don't even like repetitive patterns. Like, why am I having this experience again? Well, you're nurturing it. You're like, you're getting something out of it. Why are you taking care of this kid you didn't want? Well, because it's my obligation. It's my duty. So that's why they define the first ring, nurturing, as being so synonymous with obligation and duty, because you do it because you have to.
Go ahead.
I would think regarding the conditions that ultimately agape, of course, is complete unconditional love of everything, but in each level to really have the love, there can't be a condition.
Yeah, okay.
So, you do something out of obligation maybe, and you might not even be thrilled about it, but there's not a condition on nurturing.
Like you do it because you think that that's the right thing to do or whatever.
Not because of condition. And so I think to reach any of these points of love, to reach any ring of love, it can't have condition or it would negate the concept of love.
Well, I think each ring sort of strips away another layer of condition.
Right. I'm not saying like the whole event is unconditional, but when you're actually in that ring of love experiencing that particular thing, that level has to be accepted completely with no condition.
Yeah.
To make
okay,
it real.
I have a question here.
Yes, Sandy.
Are these rings necessarily a progression?
I think
that one is more powerful, or if, I'm thinking as I'm rereading this and listening to everybody talk all at the same time, I'm thinking not.
Well, I think it's both, because I think that as we evolve, you know, throughout all of our lifetimes, we sort of progress through the rings and rest in certain rings. You know, that becomes like a place that we live from. But I think within a lifetime, we kind of can jump around depending on the context of things. So,
well,
you know, you could have one person in your life that you have the total agape, but it's not where you live from in general.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand that. And I don't know if even with one person, if we achieve total agape, but maybe as close as we can get.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that I'm looking at that's piquing my curiosity, because I'm reading it and it makes sense, but it seems to me to negate the idea of a progression. And that's the section where it says, many fragments find this ring of love to be invigorating and creating strings of sexual and emotional relationships. This provides satisfying, beautiful, and intensely contained experiences of love. This ring of love is experienced strongly during the hormonal washes of the formative teen years. Now, again, it goes on to say, you know, that it's not only then, it happens many times, okay?
Yeah.
But if you're spending a lot of time in this ring in your teen years, it seems to me that it's likely that most people don't get real nurturing or even the reciprocity stage until later on, that they spend significant lengths of time in it. I'm not saying that they've never nurtured or they've never reciprocated, but I don't think that you'll find very many teenagers who have spent a lot of time in those earlier rings.
Well, I don't know.
But they're spending a lot of time in this fifth ring.
Well, as a child, I would think that even as a child, you nurture. Not only nurture.
To some extent.
Well, personally, I guess I can only go from my personal perspective, but I was very nurturing, I think, as a child.
Well, we're also defining nurturing as something that's really obvious, but it's not, because if you think about nurture as being the obligation, you know, a kid growing up and going to school and just going there is a form of nurturing. It's their obligation, it's what they've learned as a duty, and that's a nurturing force in their life toward themselves that's just a base. And I think this the whole concept of these rings shows how prevalent love is in our lives, even when we think it's not love. And so just getting up and going to school, just feeding yourself, is a form of nurture. So I think that nurture is a base that we all start from, whether we're conscious of it or not. And so nurturing is pretty easy to see, you know, even a kid could have for themselves. And then alliance, think about being in high school. The cliques form. Little popularity group.
Or even before high school.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying like alliance isn't that difficult to establish in your life either by similarities. You start to find
for brief periods, but not as a primary way of life.
Well, right.
But I don't know. I think that it really is in a way kind of a, if you think about it as an infant being a baby and being very small and being very young, a lot of, even though you're cared for, you still have to participate in your own nurturing to a certain extent. And even if it's something silly like a stuffed animal or a toy that you feel that you take care of, even in the basic, most common form of nurturing. But, you know, and when you get older, I really think that even a little bit older, you, things are very, I mean, they're the friends you hang out with, they're the people that are like you, they're the people that are not like you. They're, those are huge aspects of that age.
Yeah, definitely. And not everybody, but I would think that the ones who did, I'm thinking there is more of a progression than there might be on, you know, that might appear to be on the surface, because in order for you to be able to get to the point where you're, what's the next one? Reciprocity, is that where the whoring stage comes in? Where is it?
I think it's very similar.
Oh,
it's
reciprocity
very,
leads
very...
to appreciation. So, yeah, so you have to have alliance. You have to be able to attract to, you know, like people. And then
you're with your family, so you're allied. I mean, the fact of the matter is you have a form of alliance with your mother or your father. You form an alliance with your siblings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it. And then even as adults, we form alliances in our like, say, we work at a company.
Yeah.
We have alliances. We have an alliance with our department or an alliance with you know, where you're not necessarily fond of all of them, but you work with them, you know.
But, you know, I think that it's very similar to the discussion we were having on the list regarding going through the lifetimes and the monads and the soul ages. As once you get older, you can, as an old soul, you can pull in young soul concepts, young soul perspectives, those kind of things to meet certain needs. So as you grow through learning the circles of love, maybe as you grow through your soul ages, you can maybe do the early ones faster and easier the more often that you do them.
So, like, and if you're working on reciprocity, alliance might come easier to you in general.
Right.
Like, use it when you can.
It seems everything in the Michael system, that at least I can think of immediately in my head, seems to have that as you progress around, like Michael described, solely the seats in a circle, and you start out in one seat, and then you go to the next seat, and you go to the next seat, and you go to the next seat. Well, even though you're in the fourth seat, you still remember what it's like to be in the first seat.
Yeah.
You know, so you have those to fall back on, those perspectives and those experiences. So it helps you progress through that early.
Are you still thinking, Sandy, that it's not a progression?
Yeah, and everything that I've heard you guys say reinforces that to me, because I agree that at any given age, we're all capable of every single one of these things, but I don't think that we do them in any particular order. I think where we are personally, we hop around from ring to ring to ring, and I think we spend more time in some rings than others. But I don't think that it's a, well, when you're young, you spend more time in this, and then as you grow in wisdom, you grow to the next ring and to the next ring and to the next ring.
I don't think
it works that way.
Oh, I didn't think it was that literal, like related
like
to
moving
your age.
From infant to baby to young, I don't think you move from one to two to three. I think you can go from one to seven to two to six back to one, maybe in a day.
Well, yeah, but I think but here's the thing. Over our lifetimes, I do think it's a progression in general. We learn how to nurture in our early lifetimes, let's say. So that's why, as an older soul, nurturing comes easy, whether we are conscious of it or not. You know, we do what we have to do to take care of ourselves. That makes sense, since in our infant soul lifetimes, we're focused on just learning how to survive. So just the fact that you feed yourself and clothe yourself every day is, and get in out of the rain, is a form of nurture, so it comes naturally. So I think that as you progress in lifetimes and then progress within a lifetime, that if, let's say, you jump to appreciation, I think it's not that you've accomplished. I don't think there's a completion of each ring before the next one. But I do think, like, in order to use appreciation, it resonates to everything that you've learned in the other rings and brings that out to some degree in order to have the appreciation. So like,
I agree.
If you've only had a glimpses of alliance and glimpses of nurture, in order to have appreciation or reciprocity, you still have to sort of resonate to whatever you've experienced in those other rings. But I don't think you can jump to agape without having experienced, in to some degree, those first few rings. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do see what you mean, and to an extent I agree with it, but I think you're not understanding what I'm saying, because what I'm saying is, yeah, to a degree, but to me there's a huge difference between having experienced something to a degree and having something as a primary way of life.
Oh, I don't. I never.
And
I
think that your primary way of life could be five before it's one.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I don't think that's the case at all.
I think you can have glimpses of all of it and move around in it, like I said, multiple
times a day. Yes, but at this point, we're all older souls, and none of us are 3 years old either.
Yeah,
so I think we are looking at it from the perspective that we can and probably have been our whole lives jumping around. You know, I mean, there are times when I remember having very, you know, like profound experiences, which I now would put the word agape to, when I was very young. But that's because of the fact that I am an older soul and I have been in all of these situations. Like, you know, I've experienced all these forms. So I think that's why we have the ability to hop around as much as we do.
Well, also, I think that tying in with what Sandy's saying is Michael's statement that biologically, just built into us. Here's the thing. I think all of these rings are already inherent in us anyway. It's just a matter of becoming conscious of them and using them consciously. So maybe, like Sandy said, it's not a progression. It's more of a progression of conscious use of them instead of it being, one
now
or the other.
That makes sense to me.
They're already inherent in us, all of the rings, because Michael also says that through the experience of crying or tears, that's the realization of truth on some level. So to acknowledge the truth of anything is a higher ring of love. And then it goes on to say that biologically, if you true pleasure is resonating to a higher ring of love, and what most would call happiness. So it says, as these states are an experience of lacking fragmentation and self-acceptance in the moment, that's a higher ring of love. And that would be the sixth ring of love. And then the seventh ring of love is laughter. I mean, the highest form of love is related to laughter. So we must have it inherent in us to have all of these whenever we need them. And I think it's just a...
Right. But to consciously choose them,
yeah,
that's where the progression...
Or pull on them. Yeah, I think probably from our very first lifetime, they're all there, which makes sense, because considering it's one of the basic building blocks of the universe, truth, love, and energy, that why wouldn't it be? It's just a regaining of consciousness and intentional use of it. So when we bust out laughing and we're really truly laughing and we lose that differentiation between ourselves and everything around us and we feel happy and... That's amazing to think that those moments are actually the highest form of love at the moment.
And then even an infant, a first-level infant soul can experience that. It may not.
Yeah,
be
honest, even an infant baby.
Yeah.
I mean, infant child.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
but not be conscious of what they're experiencing,
no. But
still be experiencing it. That makes perfect sense. From that point of view, progression makes sense.
I could have gone into trance and asked for that, but it's kind of fun figuring it out on our own, too.
I think so. I like this.
Yeah, I think that's the way it works, then. It's a matter of regaining consciousness and choosing, you know, from what ring to, and becoming more comfortable with each ring, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about these things, I can see the possibility of all of them, but which ones do I feel comfortable doing? Which ones
right.
do I see myself leaning toward? That's a whole different thing.
Right.
And I bet that ties into the design of our personality and our experiences within a lifetime, because the level where it says to move from appreciation to comprehension, one simply begins to experience awe. That's
yeah.
I've experienced that. That's one of my favorite things is to wake up and look at my life and look at the world and just be in awe of the
mm-hmm.
whole picture. And that's comprehension. That's a sixth ring of love.
Yeah. And it's a form of love.
Or a fifth ring of love, sorry.
It's a form of love, yeah.
Yep. I think we came to something here. At least I'm happy now.
I don't know
yeah.
what anybody else thinks. But
and, you know, that's really all that matters, right?
There you go. Sandy's got it. The show's over. Show's
oh, yeah.
over.
Everything's
Sandy's,
cool.
Sandy figured it out. We're all done. We'll wrap it up. Well, we don't even have any callers on the line, but I want to make sure that if anybody's listening today that you can call in. We're going to start taking callers after a break that's coming up here, and the number is 646-200-0772. And just call in and chime in with us about love and your experience of it. Well, where do you guys think I have two questions. One is, where do you think it falls into place? Like, what do you think gets triggered for you personally when you lose, or what we experience as losing love? Like, when we break up or when we lose a relationship, or what do you see being triggered in you? Which ring? Like, which one do you fall back on? Obviously, nurture.
I'm not positive I understand that question.
Okay, let's say when you get dumped or when a relationship goes awry, I'm thinking those are really important parts of life that help us to love, you know, because how we respond to that really tells a lot about how we love. So obviously we turn to nurture to some degree because we got to take care of ourselves even though we feel a loss. But maybe there are other levels that get triggered for you guys too, like alliance. Do you turn to your friends, you know, in those moments?
Definitely.
Yeah.
That
you...
and a couple of six-packs and a bottle of wine and I, you know, and my... With my
I don't know what level that is.
That might
I think
be,
that's the ace.
That's probably reciprocity.
Yeah, right. There we go. Yeah, but I think it's, you know, then they ally with me against him or, you know, generally him or her, but generally, yeah. If you're talking about intimate sexual relationships where you felt, you know, somehow betrayed or lost or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even, you know, I've even lost very close I mean, I'm a straight person, but a very close female friendships, which were as devastating a loss as any.
I agree. That has happened to me as well.
And
I'm still bruised.
Yeah, very,
oh,
very
yeah.
painful. And you know, you do the same thing. I mean, you do try. I mean, I do alliance. I try to get people on my side, you know, to listen to my story. And maybe I hope not so much against them, but to, you know, be with me, and also, you know, maybe I nurture myself, but I also ask to be nurtured, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's really important. I think that's part of our process of learning to love is being able to say, I need your help. I need...
Wouldn't that be sort of reciprocity because it would create the circuit?
Sure, because that they'll do it for them, too, you know? I'll spend years on the phone and you know, that kind of thing.
And I think the reciprocity also extends to the person that you feel the loss with, because eventually I know that I have, you eventually say it's okay. Like
mm-hmm.
you let that person have made their decision because of what was important to them. And what's that lead to? Appreciation? So when you do that, I mean, think about it. When you lose the very thing that you wanted the most, and then you really try hard to love even in spite of that, and reciprocity comes up where you keep the connection, you keep the circuit there, and it leads to appreciation, which Michael defines as the recognizing the diversity of life, and you begin grasping the reality that not everything has to be important or have purpose.
Right.
And this is where you begin to forgive. So we have reached at least appreciation. I think appreciation is one of the places we end up when we experience loss, if we end up anywhere at all.
Also, I think comprehension, because there's a part of me that feels like I think when something does happen like that, there's got to be an understanding on my part, or at least I grasp to understand that it was that it isn't about me, mm-hmm. or that it's just a part of a bigger thing, you know?
Yeah, that it's not wrong.
That, yeah, that it's not wrong. Yes, now I'm really grasping at trying to function words. But, yeah, more of the truth of the it isn't about me, that it's about that it's a bigger picture type thing, and try to see it from that perspective, I think, is probably, for me, one of the things. I'm not saying I go there right away, mm-hmm. but ultimately I think that that's what helps me get over it. Or get past it, or comprehend, I guess.
Well, yeah, it makes sense, because that's what Michael says, the first time the self becomes fully integrated as itself in relation to the event or the person being loved, but recognizes these external factors are part of life and not defining it.
Yeah.
Right.
I think for me that's the where if it works out and I am successful, where I end up.
Yeah, you get to comprehension.
Yeah.
Looks
well, for instance, if a relationship ends, then this is seen as an this is the fifth level, I think.
Yeah.
This is an experience, not as a blow to your identity.
Yes.
And I think that's where, you know, you see it, oh, this is an experience. This is, and you become almost great. You become grateful to that person and that experience.
Yeah, as a part of your life.
Appreciate it, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's where it says that in order to get from appreciation to comprehension, that you experience awe.
Yeah.
That seems like an ironic word for for the experience.
Yeah, is that awe? Is in awe poor me?
Yeah, like, aw. But like when I'm bringing up my recent breakup, when I think about all the things that had to be in place for us to be together, and then all the things that came out of it while we were together, and then all the things that have come out of what in my life because of being in the relationship, but it ending, that I couldn't have done without the relationship ending. I do find myself in awe of, like, there's some other level of me taking care of me that knew what was better for me than I did.
Mm-hmm.
on my daily, you know, because on my everyday level, I wanted what I wanted, and that was that. But in retrospect, I'm in awe at how much better the other levels of me take care of me as well. And I wonder if you guys have experienced that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Big time.
It says everything seems to begin to make sense despite a lack of logic. It's like,
yeah.
Okay, it all makes sense. It's not what I wanted, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other question I have was with Sandy, because you've been in such a great relationship, and I wonder what it's like to have been in a long-term relationship to the extent that probably all levels or all rings have been experienced, and how you see that coming into play when you think about your intimate mate over a long period of time. How does this apply to that? You think you jump around as well, probably?
Yeah, definitely. I think not as well, but probably more than most of the others, because, you know, I had a lot of short-term relationships in my life. a tremendous number. And in those, I may have only experienced one or two rings because
right, okay.
they were very short. but they were nonetheless intense.
That's the appreciation level. The whoring about, is that what it was called?
Yeah, that's
the whore level.
Good name. Yeah, that's that whore level. And it lasted long past my teens. It started in them, but lasted long past them. And so I look at that, and then I look at in terms of my long-term relationship, which is my marriage, which will be 36 years this year, I think. Yeah, and a year before that. And so that's a long time, and we have definitely bounced all over every level.
Now, when
and
you
again,
think about that relationship.
I have to say, sometimes multiple times per day, you know, I can go from I love you more than anything in this world to I can't stand the sight of you and I hope I never see you again in the space of 2 to 3 minutes.
But see, you can do that because you really love him.
Right.
And I wonder if
And that's a tremendous sense of freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even Cypress and I have experienced this over the years as our friendship grew. And even with you, Sandy, I feel that's, I think, a really important.
You mean you have moments when you don't love me?
Well, you get. I think it's a real indication of true intimacy when you don't feel threatened by
the lack
anything.
Of love.
Yeah, by the what seems to be the lack of love. Because,
yeah.
You know, Sandy and I have had our knockdown, drag out things, and Cypress and I have had the same thing, and I don't feel threatened at all. I don't feel a fear of losing them.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lack of love. I think it's just, you know, we're people. We have personalities. You know,
yeah.
Like
you said, it's this freedom, and it feels good to be able to go, you know, throw your tantrum and know you're going to still be there on the other side of it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Not only
it's not a lack of love, it's a freedom to hate.
Yes.
Yeah. He does mention true hate.
And
oh,
I think that that really. And know that it doesn't hurt the love.
Yeah.
Right.
That it's stronger than that.
Yeah.
And again, you know, comparing it to the earlier part of my life when men were drifting in and out of it and, you know, mostly staying long enough to give me another baby, there was never a freedom to have any kind of a feeling other than, you know, I don't know, whatever the hell it was while they were there and devastation when they were gone.
Yeah. Well, that's the fourth ring.
That there was no freedom to have anything else beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a whole different world.
Now, do you think that in this relationship that you're in now, that you rest at a higher level on a regular basis, or do you not see one that's prevalent, that stands out the most?
No, in terms of that relationship, I would have to say that, I think we rest on a fairly high level.
Okay.
And I think that applies to both of us. I would say... I forgot the names of them already.
Aren't there levels of trust, too, though? I mean, wouldn't there be just like their seven rings of love? Wouldn't there be, like, levels of trust?
Oh, definitely, because...
Absolutely.
Yeah, because trust is based on experience, and
mm-hmm.
I guess I would think the more experience you have, the more trusting you would be, because that's where trust is drawn from, is
mm-hmm.
that sense of experience. So I think that the greater the ring of love is in relation to the amount of trust you have, or is at least related to the amount of trust you have in that context. That's a good point.
That's a very good point.
I mean, I wonder if there's possible to experience love without trust, or are the two absolutely intertwined? Just curious. I mean, I would think no, but, you know, who knows what Michael might say about it.
You know what? I wonder if as the rings progress, the need for trust or the emphasis on trust is lost.
Yeah, I agree.
The greater the greater the lack of condition, the
right.
greater the lesser the need for trust.
Right, right.
That makes
or
perfect
maybe
sense.
It transcends it. I don't know exactly the right words that describe it, but I would think in the moment, let's say agape, why would you even need to turn to trust? Because or maybe it's just they become so fused, I guess you could say.
You don't have the fear.
Yeah, there's nothing.
You know,
you're not worried about it. You trust it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. Those are I see them now when you brought that up as being something that merges together,
yeah.
instead of being something that's dependent on each other.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, we got some wise sages on the air today. All right, well, I'm going to invite the callers to call in again, if there's anybody out there, 646-200-0772. I know you're all probably watching the Super Bowl or getting ready for it or something, but put your popcorn down and stop chewing. And
well, Troy, we do have people in the chat room, and so I'm wondering if maybe they would prefer not to pay for phone calls, and if so, maybe you would invite them to put their comments or questions.
Hello, those of you in the chat room. Oh, I see there's plenty in there. You guys are welcome to comment in the chat room. And we're going to take a little break. You guys get a little drink or wet your whistle. And we'll come back and we'll finish our conversation with or without our callers. But I would love to have you guys involved. So you guys take a little break and we'll be back, okay?
Bye.
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 Take a little potty break myself.
Yeah, I couldn't wait.
I was getting kind of squirmy.
Okay, so we're back. I'm going to bring our panel back on. And hey, Sandy. Hey, Anne. Hey, Cypress.
Hey.
Hi.
Everybody get all comfy back in. I didn't quite get you on mute fast enough to hear that, not to hear that everybody had to go pee, so that was nice.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry about that.
I kept that to myself, although it was still true.
That's love. See, we're not only talking about
sorry.
Love, we're exemplifying it. Love.
Sorry about that, listeners.
I know. Throughout the whole lovely song, everybody's pictured you squirming the whole time.
I was squirming, yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, thank God for the breaks, though, because, you know, it's
yeah.
a difficult thing to continue a conversation and try to go
yeah,
to the bathroom, no matter how much you're loved. So in the chat room, Lisa Freeman, oh, here we go. There's
there
a comment. She says, as a warrior with ServerCast, I have found love difficult where I almost go to the point of trying to capture it. And then when it doesn't go my way, I sabotage it. I don't know if there's more comment. We'll see in a minute. But, oh, I relate to that.
Yeah, actually, I'm not even a warrior, but I've got that lovely warrior essence twin.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the warrior thing. I think it's just a human thing for some of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I have definitely gone into relationships that were so great. And but I don't know if this is kind of tied into it, but I start to nitpick and I start to, like, sabotage it. And why do we do that? And what does that have to do with love?
Well, she says she does it when it's not going her way. I've been known to do it when it is going my way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, more often than not, when it's going your way, you're
well,
still
I have
fine.
An opinion.
Yes, dear.
Well, my opinion is quite often I don't think we feel deserving.
Ah.
And that is why you will nitpick and ruin it. Because, you know, I think that our society teaches us so many things that are just so fucked up. You know, like, you have to have this to get that and this to get that. And, you know, do you really deserve these things? And
it's not,
you know,
right,
I think
it's like this. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That it's too good to be true kind of thing. And you would wait for the next shoe to fall. And so you sabotage it so that you can prove yourself right. You really aren't lovable. Because I think that that's a, I'm not saying everybody has the same problem, but I definitely think that, especially older souls, you struggle more with loving yourself than you do with loving other things, and maybe even younger souls. Maybe that's just a universal issue because it is harder. Self-love is one of the last things you learn to really learn to do, I think.
Yeah.
And so if you don't think you're lovable, you will make that happen in your life. And if it's not happening without your assistance, you give it a little push.
Well, going back to what Lisa commented about, where she says she goes to the, she, let's say, I have found love difficult where I almost go to the point of trying to capture it. I think that's the key in why it doesn't, why you tend to go towards sabotaging it, because if you've captured something that isn't truly love, or if it's not appropriate, then rather than owning up to it and you know, honoring it and saying, whoops, you might start to sabotage it in a way to get out of it instead of actually just owning up to it. So maybe in the future, instead of sabotaging it as the way of moving on, maybe just owning up and saying, you know, this isn't really the place, you know, I can love this and leave it and not just sabotage it.
Well, you know, the, and sorry, Lisa, I'm just going to mention that the negative pull for a warrior is coercion. You know, and just like I could,
they are big on that.
I can talk somebody to death, but because I don't, because I have arrogance, I don't try to go out and capture it. You know.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
I don't try to get out of it. It's a matter then of winning. Ah, yes. Ah, yes. But when I'm trying to, I will just lose complete interest. And that could be impatience, which is my secondary CF.
Or arrogance.
Out of here. Yeah.
Because arrogance doesn't like to be seen closely.
Right, and being, you know, and then I act indifferent. You know, but the impatience comes in the relationships where I just get like, you know, things aren't happening in my time schedule. But I think it's similar, though. It's not going my way.
That's a very good point, the time schedule thing.
Yeah, right. You know.
It's like, I should be seeing this by now. I should be feeling
yeah.
this by now. You should be doing this by now.
Right. Yeah. Why isn't this working exactly this way?
Lisa has arrogance with self-doubt. Welcome to the club, Lisa. Isn't it fun?
Vulnerability and inadequacy. Yay! Well, okay, so she said it's a matter then of winning. So that makes me think of sabotaging as also this, it's kind of reducing everything back to nurture because we want to protect ourselves. And when we start to get close to other people or feel intimate, sometimes we start to interpret that as threatening and scary because it's opening up to levels that we might not be normally opening to. And so we start to sabotage it to back out of it and reduce ourselves back to nurture or alliance. So that's interesting to think about, that as we creep up through the rings, that we do certain things to like push us back out of those rings so that we can sort of get our footing again and try later because we feel threatened. You guys feel threatened by certain experiences of love?
Sure.
Yes.
Of course.
Well, absolutely. And getting back to what Lisa said about when it doesn't go my way, I sabotage it. You know, that gives you a little bit of control at least. If it's not working, maybe I better cause the breakup.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody with arrogance and self-doubt in particular, you know, that's going to make the pain much less to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And even if you suffer just as much pain, at least you don't suffer the shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matthew is commenting, I do find it a little odd talking about love in a talk show format without silence and a lot of relaxation. It's hard to receive in this format, and that's the point of the higher rings. I'm not sure I understand the
point. Well, you know, and I just said we don't have to be in any of the higher rings. I mean, I think that this is informational, and then you go back and experience it. I mean, you know,
well,
this is an information session, not necessarily an experiential session.
Oh,
right,
no.
So we're talking about love, not making it.
Yeah.
Well, we're making love the best way we can right now.
Right, in this format. You know.
Yeah, I don't know what I don't. Yeah, it would kind of defeat the purpose of our having a conversation about it if we just sat here quietly.
Right.
This is a talk show, not a meditation, and
right.
It would be great to do that, like to lead that, but that's not what the show is. But
yeah.
After the show, then you can take all the information and sit with it, ponder it, and experience it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry,
and
that,
I will.
But I don't know if silence and relaxation is the point of the higher rings.
Especially since tears, laughter, and what was the other one?
Pleasure.
Pleasure are, none of those are silent, really.
No.
Well, pleasure could be, but,
right.
You know, tears
yeah, not
quiet,
much.
And laughter really isn't either.
It can be, and I think it can be experienced, you know, that way. I mean, it depends on that. I mean, I don't think, I would say that, you know, sorry, Matthew, but that's a condition. You know, sorry. And I want to say very clearly that I put conditions all the time, and I'm not arguing, you know, I mean, and that, but that, you know, we always have to check ourselves. What conditions are we putting on things?
That's a very good point.
You know, I mean, I certainly went through my whore mama phase, which was when I decided that I could love, you know, I can love anybody. You know,
yeah,
or everybody,
right. But oh, believe me, it was a little bit like, you know, the fickle finger of fate just pointing in a certain direction. I go, sure, he'll do, but you know, certainly, I think that one of the points of this is that what conditions do I keep putting on this to not experience another one of the rings? You know, I mean, what are my conditions?
That's very good.
Do I feel like I have to be alone in order to experience it? Do I have to feel like I can't be alone in order to experience? You know, does it only about other people? I mean, I've had great relationships with my pets.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, deeply. And I think it went a little bit beyond nurturing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Alive with me. Yeah.
I'm positive it's probably way easier with a pet because they do less things to irritate.
Well,
there
I think
go,
that,
yeah.
that goes back to the sense of not feeling threatened, you know.
Yeah.
when we have a captive audience, when we captured our love.
Yeah, Michael has talked about that because my obsession with my dog, and when in the Whole Souls class, how even in the first chapter, things that you fear losing. Well, the first thing I think about losing that I get panicky is, oh my God, my dog. You know, and that it's not about really the dog, it's about unconditional love. And that's probably one of the most obvious ways of getting unconditional love as a pet.
Yeah.
Matthew goes on to say, I didn't mean turn it into complete silence, just allow silent bits. In other words, room. But I think that's something you probably just have to squeeze in yourself or after the show. I'm not sure. I'm really
in radio parlance, it's called dead air. So, you know, that's what radio people absolutely do whatever they can to avoid.
I'm a little confused what he means, but
whatever, yeah.
But the room will have.
Yeah, maybe what he's saying is that love just isn't a good topic for this show. And that certainly is valid an opinion as any.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that talking about it has definitely put it more in my consciousness, as at least for me. Maybe other people don't, you know, not everybody's going to experience, you know, a raising of consciousness by talking about an issue. But for me, and for a lot of people, talking about it or listening to a discussion about a subject really helps trigger a higher consciousness about it, an awareness
right.
about it. I think that's the point.
Yeah, I think it's working for me, too. I think I'm going to give Larry a big old hug.
Lots of loving.
You know,
I'm
thinking what, you know, Lisa was talking about, why we sabotage, you know, what are various ways. I mean, I think that the fact that anyone recognizes their pattern, you know, and doesn't blame the other person first is a huge thing.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That's
the fact
true.
That she, you know, says, this is what I do. And
that's a very good point.
It's really, 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 you know, helpful to see what are my patterns here. And, you know, even if we nurture that pattern, even if we can't change that pattern, you know, the first way to change it is to observe it. And, you know, and I also think that, you know, she, with arrogance and self-depth, she may be really hard on herself, you know,
yeah.
in terms of what she's actually doing. You know, that she may be kinder or less coercive than she thinks.
That's a very
you know.
Good point, too. And then, you know, the greater you acknowledge those things, the quicker you can catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, instead of going into sabotage, you kind of go into choice instead. You kind of consciously own the choice that if this relationship isn't working out, it doesn't mean that I'm losing, and keeping it doesn't mean I'm winning.
Right.
You either
right.
love or you don't. You know, you either allow that person, you know, that the relationship is good for you or it's not what you want. But it's not about winning or losing or, you know, trying to capture it.
Or being rejected.
Oh, yeah, about even being rejected. Michael once said, and I haven't seen it repeated very often, but they have said there is no such thing as true rejection. And I think that's a really interesting concept to ponder. And I think that goes back to it kind of relates to their saying there's no such thing as misunderstanding or there's no such thing as misrepresentation because it's always about our interpretation. It's about our personal experience. So true rejection is only our interpretation of – I mean, rejection is usually just our interpretation of somebody else's choice disappointing us.
Yeah.
I mean, that person can say, I don't want you anymore, and we can call it rejection, but it's not true rejection. It doesn't – which I think is related to, like, you don't have any worth or you don't have any value or you're a bad person. When they say true rejection doesn't exist, I think that's what it means, that you can't honestly go in that direction because it's not true that you're not worth it or it's just somebody else's choice.
And that goes back to that ring, whatever ring it says that, for instance, if a relationship says this is seen as an experience, not as a blow to your identity.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you get there, then you can kind of make room for other people's choices, and you don't see them as so, you know,
tied up with your ideas about what things should be. And then there's more freedom. Do you guys find that you go into relationships at a higher level than previous ones because of experiences? Do you guys find that you, like, you know, you try to start them at a higher level, or do you think they all start sort of and work through, you know, from nurture?
Mine, if we're talking about romantic relationships, mine generally start at that really high level of body type attraction.
I think they all start there.
Yeah, well,
you know, it's not.
I haven't started a new one in a while. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it really boils down to, are you hot? You know?
Yeah. It's really, really sort of pretty primate-like. But I do think that even friendships, though, I think there's probably an element of body type attraction on some level. I mean, or something. I mean, energetic. It's got to be, you know, an energetic thing. And I'm not quite sure, you know, whether they start on a higher level, whether my demands are different or my expectations are different. Or I really don't know. I don't know.
I think I start out with a lot of good intentions that they're going to start at high level.
Maybe that's,
you know?
Maybe that's a real important thing to realize, that we don't start at a higher level. Maybe we set ourselves up for sabotage when we think we are.
Well, I mean, because, you know, you think you, because if you're just sitting in a room by yourself, it's very easy to think, you know, I have love for humanity, and, you know, it's a whole different thing when it's conceptual.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just sitting here thinking about it or talking about it. You can actually achieve those moments where you think, you know, I understand people, everybody's choices are different, and it's not a reflection of me and that and this and that. But when you're sitting across from somebody at a table having a discussion about politics and they're completely different opinion as you, and it's a little bit harder to love.
Yeah.
You know, in circumstances, you know, or when they say something you find offensive, you know, or do things that, you know, upset your delicate sensibilities.
Well,
you know,
I
think that I have found myself, maybe it's because I have the goal of acceptance in the Overleaves, that I tend to lean towards people who really stretch my ability to love, because I cannot believe it. I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking, I need to surround myself with like-minded people. I would love it if all my friends were vegetarian, all my friends were, you know, spiritual. And instead, I find myself around really silly people in general, just socially speaking, who are wearing fur, who's important, you know, what designer they're wearing is really important, and their politics, my God, gay Republicans and women who think that George Bush are the greatest thing that ever happened on the planet, and I still care. In certain circumstances, it has no bearing on our friendship whatsoever, and I'm surprised. It shocks me sometimes that that's the case.
But is that not glimpses of agape?
I would think so.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to find that the glimpses of agape that I have are with the people I would find technically the least lovable.
I think it's because you have to look past all those things. I mean, people like you and I, who have a lot of similarities, not everything is the same, but we have a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
It's easier to pick out those little differences and blow them up. But when what's so different is so giant and obvious, you know, it's easier to step past them because they're so...
And amplify the similarities.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's,
I think
really
that that's...
Point.
That's
an
how,
awesomely good point, Cypress.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think that's how we learn to accept. I mean, I have acceptance, too, as a goal. And I think that's one of the ways we make it okay or teach ourselves how to accept.
That's a very good point. I think we tend to love from both angles. And I think that in order for us to get past certain points, you know, certain rings, we do tend to have to go towards those who are the most challenging because, I mean, what's there to rise above if you're really similar? That's just alliance. That's just, you know.
Yeah,
well, exactly, yeah.
You don't necessarily have to move past that.
And also, I think sometimes it's hard to, I mean, even for just using you and I as an example, because we have very similar charts. We have, I mean, you know, I'm a white girl, you're a gay guy. I mean, we're not the same person, but we have a lot of similar.
We dovetail nicely.
Yes, we do. We have a lot of similar, you know, theories about things. We have a lot of similar beliefs, a lot of similar tastes. You know, not many people choose the color pink for the bedroom, and we both choose the same one.
You know, we have
a lot of similarities. But it's also easier in mirroring and seeing those similarities to pick those differences and really blow them up. You know, I mean, we clearly have differences that are easily.
Yeah, well.
And then so you get so allotted in alliance. And Michael had said before, one of the reasons we had asked, I just read this yesterday when I was reading an old session, where we said, you know, how come everybody who's our friend ends up being crazy? And when we were in Raleigh, we had asked that question. And
yeah.
Michael said that, you know, we have created an alliance. We've created this us against them situation. And when you're similar, it's easy to create an alliance, and sometimes harder maybe to get past those points than
yeah,
it
that's
is
a very good point.
That's a strong bond, an alliance.
It's also very painful when you have this alliance with somebody and then there are areas or issues in the relationship that make you incredibly uncomfortable, or whether you've done a lot of accepting, and this is, you know, in terms of, you know, friendships or any relationships, and then there's this other part where they, you know, they literally drive you up a tree, you know, and,
that's true.
And it's very hard to make your peace with it. I mean, you struggle, and you still love them, you know,
mm-hmm.
but you still, you know, they're just those areas where they're going to make you uncomfortable in some areas, and you do, you know, you, I guess that is that hate part, you know, where you can feel some real, you know, annoyance and anger and even, you know, fury at them.
Yeah.
In the midst of it. I mean, you guys make me really happy. I don't have acceptance as a goal. It's a hard one.
I think it's a pretty good one. I think it's better than growth. That one's always
beautiful.
Upsetting.
It's very
everyone,
beautiful. I mean,
everyone who has growth is always worked up.
They're all wonderful in their own way.
They are. I'm just like, whoa, wow. I mean, I think I have to say that acceptance looks very beautiful. I mean, I think it is. You can see why it's one of the most difficult goals. But it's like, woo.
And it's one we all go back to over lifetimes and lifetimes and
it's
ultimately try to attain.
Yeah,
I mean, it is funny when you think about it. I mean, acceptance seems like, oh, you know, we're such accepting people, that's why we have the goal of acceptance. But, you know, it really is about pushing yourself past what you can accept.
It's a constant consciousness about it, too. It's not like, you know, it's definitely something that we strive for, not have. We don't have
definitely.
Because we have had so many experiences over our lifetime and over our friendship where other people have said, you guys are so critical. You know, you're so, you know, we like I said earlier, we nitpick and we find reasons not to accept people. And then we catch ourselves and we have to re-put ourselves on track. Because
it's not easy either.
Yeah. But also it's important to focus on what you can accept. Get the things out of your life that you can't until you feel a grounding or, you know, your footing so that you can take on those challenges that are more difficult to accept. So it's not just about saying, all right, bring it on. It's about being able to say, okay, bring it on, but, okay, now I've had enough for a while.
Oh, you have to slide to discrimination.
And then finding your way through those levels of love in the process.
Yeah. You can't just jump right into it, you know, without really being conscious and effective.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just, it's not really love, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if infant, first level instant, infant souls can experience love in the way they, you know, experience love. No.
Yeah,
I mean,
they would. I would think they can.
Experience love. You know,
I would think they can because, I mean, they're the closest to, you know, getting off the bus kind of thing, you know. And
well, what do you guys think is the word? Like, what if you had to name something, and I'm sure we all have seen this amplified, you know, regularly, but what is it that you just can't love in another person or let's say in another person, we'll start there. Like, what is it when it comes up? You just say, okay, enough. I can't do it. I'm not ready to love that. I can't accept that.
Cruelty.
Bigotry.
Wow. Cruelty would be very difficult. I'd have to put that one up there.
Yeah.
Cruelty. Although I can have compassion for it, though.
What about you, Troy?
Well, I was thinking a little bit more like in our daily lives. Like it's very...
Bossiness.
Huh?
Somebody what I feel is trying to control me.
Ooh.
Being controlling.
I find myself being challenged by, and Sandy, I don't want to hear a word, but I find myself really thrown off by inconsideration. I hate it. I can't stand to be around it. When I'm out in public and there are people behaving obnoxiously, completely violating the boundaries of everybody around them for their own selfish whatever, I find myself really, really challenged to find love or acceptance of a person in those moments. And I've had to actually I've had to actually consciously say in a lot of circumstances that remind myself, these are people enjoying life. They're doing what they're doing, and it's not all about me in some circumstances. But
you know
time,
what, Troy?
What?
I just had a conversation yesterday with my sister on this very subject, and I said then, and I still mean it with all, it's going to sound funny, but I mean it with all sincerity. Those people are the reason I believe in gun control. Because things like that upset me so much that if I had a gun handy, I could easily shoot people.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I would shoot anybody, but...
I know, I have it in me.
Yeah.
And the only thing that saves me is that it only lasts a second.
Yeah, yeah.
And since I don't have the weapon right there, that protects me. If I had one strapped to my hip...
Well, I've had to consciously remind myself that a lot of what I consider to be inconsiderate... is just my standards. It's not everybody's standards, and I have to kind of check myself that not everybody's going to be considerate to the extent that I think people should be, and they're not going to live up to
that idealism thing.
Yeah, and as Sandy will attest, there are times I'm accused of being inconsiderate when I didn't know I was. I didn't know it. So we don't always have a clear idea of everybody's boundaries. So I have to really rise above that. The assumption that everybody understands everybody else's boundaries.
I think if people are blocking the train doors and they don't know they're considerate, that can't even be true. How can you not know you're considerate when
you're
impeding other people's?
There are probably degrees of it, but still, it's not. Sometimes they just don't realize it. I mean,
I think that if in a daily situation, not in the overall spectrum. Because cruelty would be the more overall spectrum. But I think being inconsiderate is one of the things that bothers me the most, too.
In daily living, yeah. I have to go with that,
living.
Too.
The question then becomes, thinking about this, is then with who does it hurt, really, when we get enraged by that stuff? I mean,
ourselves only. Yeah.
And so, if we had the gun. You want to hear me when I'm behind the wheel of a car. I mean, it's one just hideous expletive after another. And everybody's a moron. I mean, and that's the nicest way I put it.
But we ride the train.
Not a lot. Yeah.
But we ride the train, so there's no car between us and the other people.
No. But I ride the train, too, so I know. And, I mean, I loathe and despise them.
Yeah.
You know, and what good is that doing me? You know,
oh,
and that's
I know.
The thing that
because
becomes
it's like,
my answer to that.
Like if I'm on a subway and somebody plays their cell phones MP3s and it's that horrible tinny sound, I hate it. And I think it's so inconsiderate of other people. And then I have
Are
to
Are you talking
of,
about that terrible noise that comes out of people's headphones?
Yeah.
No, the cell, well, that too. But that I can understand because sometimes you just don't know it's that loud outside your headphones. But,
well, then you should make it a point of finding out, because one day I'm going to be sitting near you with a gun.
Well, there are some people who actually turn on their cell phones and play the speakerphone with their MP3s that sound terrible, and they're playing it all real loud, and all you hear is really loud throughout the train. I hate it. But
yeah, I would hate that too. But
it's worse than
people
the headphones
with their though. iPods on. And you don't know what they're playing, but it's whatever it is, you can just hear the...
Yeah.
And I mean, that sound is so loud that when I have my headphones on, and it drowns out what mine's playing for me.
Well, I think those things are annoying, but to me, it's when people block the way for the door. I think, because the noise is irritating, but the other way is actually impeding you to get on or off the train.
Well, that's good. That's a good question, because yours is the blocking of the door. For me, I can rise above the noise thing, because it's not, it's just something I can try to do. But what I can't stand, what's really challenging, is in my neighborhood in particular, when you're standing in line to pay for something and you're in the middle of your transaction and the person behind you pushes past you and sets their stuff in front of you and starts talking to the cashier to ring her up or ring them up, that I can't understand it. I don't understand it, and I don't know how to rise above it yet.
Yeah,
and
me
I wanted
too.
To share with you real quickly that in the chat room, Catherine says, driving outside and being next to the car with both your windows all closed and your vehicle shaking from the vibration of noise coming from their car. I hate that too.
Me
too.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah, look at them and say, thanks for sharing. Just so wanted to hear that particular song.
Yeah. I do think noise violation is really, especially in New York City, you have to rise above it at some point.
It's true in Chicago too. You really do, and I am sensitive to noise, and I do become infuriated, and I don't like people talking loudly on their cell phones on the bus.
Oh, God,
the thing is that these are the things that make day-to-day existence. I mean, we talk about relationships, and we talk about our love relationships and that kind of thing, but the day-to-day existence of not wanting to reach over and throttle, whoops, hello?
Hello?
I think we lost our
connection.
Hello?
What happened?
Hello?
Oh, I don't know. Okay, we just had a weird, some kind of thing. But you don't want to reach over and take a gun or throttle somebody.
Yeah.
That we deal with those. I don't know if people in the country have the same issue, but we deal with those as city dwellers living amongst many other people on a day-to-day basis. And, that racks up a lot of anger.
Well, that's the true, real test of where you live from love.
That's true.
Because you certainly don't feel allied by them, and you certainly ain't going to nurture them.
And again, I have this urge to kill them.
No, I think.
But Larry, you know what Larry does?
What?
He just joins in their conversation.
You know what?
And that invariably makes them shut up because they get so angry. They get angry instead of him being angry. When they're saying, well, what time are you going to be here tonight? And Larry will go, 6:15.
Hey, Ann.
Yeah.
I think that the nurturing is in place because, do you guys hear my own echo?
Yes, I do.
I don't.
I don't.
And I hear my own echo, too.
Yeah, I do, too. Well, anyway, nurturing is when you don't shoot them. So I think nurture, no matter what, is still a basic form of love that you can bring to a challenge.
That's true, because it's nurturing yourself, because you don't want to go to jail for this insanity.
Well, it goes back to obligation and duty. It's like, okay, I'm obliged as a human being not to take out my own species.
Right, yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess we're at level one, at ring one. If you can just remain in ring one and perhaps work your way into hard to be an alliance, but maybe.
Well, Larry's in ring two. He's lying.
You know what? I think he's got the best plan.
Yeah.
He does.
Well, the show's about to wind up.
Okay.
And this echo is driving me crazy. But I have some interesting news for you.
Yes.
In the process of our show and talking about love, and my concern over my bunnies being a boy and a girl and getting them neutered and spayed in time, which I had to wait for them to, have the balls drop or whatever.
Testicles,
Troy, testicles.
Oh, yeah, testicles drop. I have just discovered they're both boys.
Oh, hallelujah.
Well,
now you have gay bunnies.
Now you have gay bunnies.
But how did you find out?
Because the girl was humping his head. And
leave the girl alone.
I'll have to do some research, but I'm not sure if the girl bunny's hump. Maybe she's.
Baby girl has always been very manly.
Yeah, supposedly my bunny's the reincarnation of her cat.
I just don't even know what to say. I think this will call for some research.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll do some research. And, yeah, just like Catherine says, there's issues with having two boys, too. But if they're neutered, there's less problems. And also because they grew up together, that's usually a good thing.
But the,
well, and there's no female there to fight over.
But when we got him, the woman said, remember, she said she had to separate the two boys because they were fighting and ripping each other's ears apart, even though they grew up together.
Well, thank you. That's very encouraging.
Well, just get them fixed.
Well, keep in mind, they're not; those weren't neutered.
I know,
yeah, you're still
going to
get them neutered, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because it's healthier, regardless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Believe me, if we could neuter humans, I would, too.
I agree there, too.
Many of them.
I would
thanks for
on
another
my own.
Really great show. And I keep interrupting myself because it's my own voice echoing back. I don't know if that's going to show up in the final MP3 or not, but Cypress and I are echoing. Cypress and I, we have our own chorus now.
Thank God it only happened at the end.
So are we going to end this topic of love with a rousing chorus of Kumbaya or something?
Kumbaya. Love.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, thank
love
you.
Love will keep us together. We can sing that, although not everybody knows Captain and Tennille.
Catherine hears your echo, Troy.
Muskrat, muskrat, candlelight, doing it.
Oh,
and
God.
Okay,
right.
That's really bad. Now we've really devolved. Okay.
Okay, you guys. Thanks for tuning in. And for the listeners, if you'd like more information about the Michael teachings, go to truthloveenergy.com and check out the basic intro so that you know what the hell we're talking about, because a lot of what we say is referencing the terminology that Michael uses, and it'll help you a lot and get more out of the show. You guys have a great day, and I love you.
I love you, too.
Love you, too.
Love you, too.
Love you, too, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you guys in the chat room for being a part of the show. I really appreciate it.
For sure.
Okay, bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
I'm not Blog Talk Radio.